No, do you know what? Yeah, this is absolutely genuine. Yeah, I'm really excited to have Rajan on here because you don't actually know this, but when I went to my first networking group at London Chamber, someone said, I think it was a guy called Ash, and he was like, there's a guy here from Croydon. And I was like, fresh, and I didn't really know much about networking. He's like, there's a guy here from Croydon, he's going to make you feel really comfortable, reach out. And it was you.
Okay.
It was you. And since then, more networking events, you created Croydon Connect.
Connecting Croydon,
which we're going to go into. But your personality and the way you speak is very fluid. And really, much, I've really looked up to the way how you conduct yourself and sort of in big spaces and even speaking and presenting to like mass crowds and stuff like that. So excited to have you on here. Thank you very much to you and Ash.
That's very kind. Thank you.
So, Rajan. Okay.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about yourself.
So, okay, a little bit about me. Very fast track. Born in Uganda. In 65, so you can work out how old I am. Migrants from Uganda, we were kicked out by Idi Amin, so we came here in 72. So I was seven, lived in Willesden originally. My parents worked in a factory. My dad in Heinz factory beans, I think. My mom in a factory as well. Moved to Balham, so I'm a Balham boy, really. In 73, my dad opened a sari shop in Balham, and then I was in Balham till 1999. So I did all my schooling, my primary schooling, secondary schooling, all in Balham. Very fond memories of Balham, formative years as a youngster, as a teenager, and have some really happy memories of Balham. And then got into helping my parents run some sweet shops or confectionery stores or CTNs, whatever you want to call them. Did that for a few years and then joined Ally Dunbar, or as in those days, some people called it Ally Crowbar, foot through the door. commission-only salesman. Selling life cover and pensions and savings plans and things like that. Did that for 6 years. I only survived because I was living with my parents.
Right.
If I wasn't living under the same roof, I would have had to stop within probably a year and go get a proper job, a real job. But I survived, thankfully, God's grace. And my lucky break came in January 97. I got a call from a local broker in Tooting. Very successful Asian broker. They rang me up and said, oh, we've heard about you. We want to meet you. You look after some of our clients. We get a lot of inquiries for financial services, but we don't have somebody in the office to deal with them. I went and met them. I was blessed to have a really good manager at Dunbar. And my best man sitting next to me was Glenn Brook, who was also my best man at my wedding. They gave me some really good advice. When I told them about it, they said, yeah, you've got to go join it. It's a golden opportunity. Don't look a gift horse in the mouth. And I went and joined them. And that was the turning point, really, for me. You know, when people say you get a lucky break. Well, that was my lucky break. Just to give you an example, in my first 12 months with them, I earned more with them than I did in 6 years with Dunbar.
Wow.
So that gives you an indication of the earnings power. I became an independent financial advisor, an IFA. Three really successful years. Found my my life partner Hina and my rock. Absolutely, we got married in 99. Set up Covershore, the franchise, with a partner in August 2000. Very quickly realized that maybe it wasn't the right formation of a partnership. So we broke away and set up our own office in Kennington in January 2003, just me and Hina. The Wimbledon office continued, and we moved to Croydon. And again, when we talk about things that happen and things that really have an impact on your life,
almost like a butterfly effect.
Yeah, and that move to Croydon was another ripple that eventually has led to us selling our business 7 years down the road. So we sold our business in September 22. And as I sit here now in front of you, I now work for the business that we used to own. And absolutely love what I do now. So that's brought you right up to date, you know.
Okay, so there's a couple bits there which I definitely want to talk to you about because it starts to make a little bit more sense. So you come from a sales background.
Dunbar, I think even before Dunbar, so I think from an early age, I think as a lot of people say, you had the gift of the gab.
Yes.
You know, so from an early age, I was like that. Because my dad's parents owned a sari shop, Hindus, which is what we are, get married in a mandap, a square mandap, which is a religious, you know, significance, and a couple gets married in there. We, me and my cousin Chetan and some other friends, we used to hire out that, because my dad would get the referral and mm-hmm. we would go and set it up on a Sunday morning, mm-hmm. get the cash in hand, mm-hmm. go play cricket all day, go mm-hmm. pick it up later on. And so I think from an early age, we had this, one, we were self-sufficient, didn't have to go to our parents for money. Secondly, it allowed us to interact and do business from quite an early age, 16, you know, it's relatively early age. So I think I got that gift of the gap from an early age. Also, I wasn't the biggest lad, the best looking lad out of everybody. So you had to have something, and having a, you know, the ability to speak to people, especially the opposite sex, helped, you know. So I think it was a combination. It wasn't, so when I went to Dunbar, I think I already had a little bit of that.
Yeah.
But Dunbar, credit to Dunbar, they were very good at training their people.
And getting it more.
Yeah. And they were always all about you, about being able to articulate what you're doing. Mm. And I think that's, as you get older, you learn that that is a really good skill to have.
Because I can feel it. Like I said, the day I met you and I saw how you coordinated and you moved around the group and you introduced yourself, it was very effortless. And as someone who's sort of like a natural introvert, shall I say, I can kind of spot these type of individuals very quickly because I can tell that this isn't like a persona, or you're not putting something on. Like, this felt genuine. This felt like really fluid in the way that you do it. So it makes a lot more sense now that you come from a sales background. And even at 16, when you probably didn't think that you was doing immediate sales, that ability for you to engage with people and get something that you wanted from that person, it is stemming from sales, isn't it?
And another thing, not just the Dunbar, but if you go back exactly before Dunbar, I was in a sweet shop over a counter.
Yeah.
So 20 people for
the engagement, engagement.
Well, you're constantly talking to people. And you have to be nice, you have to smile, otherwise people don't come back.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think all of that was a learning journey.
Yeah, yeah.
To making Rajan who he was.
Was you aware that you was developing these skills and you're maybe someone excelling in this type of communication more than the average person?
I wouldn't say I was blatantly aware. I think you become aware when, you know, you do well somewhere. So like when I got the call to say, come and join us, that was like being headhunted. So I felt...
But did you know it was because of that?
Well, because they told me to say, you know, you look after some of our clients. They say you're good. You do it. You're looking after them well. So we want you... So that... In a roundish way, says you're doing something good. You know, I mean, at Dunbar, I had certificates to say consistency of application, consistency of business staying on the books, 96%, 98%. So that was all an affirmation of you do good business, you do it in a good way. You know, people don't cancel the policy after they've started it. So all of that, in a way, sort of reinforced that you're doing a good thing. But look, I want to share a story with you. My dad was not happy when I said I wanted to join Dunbar.
Right.
He was against me doing that. He, even on the last day, he said to me, look, Rajan, I know you've fallen out with my brothers, my uncles, you know, but we can buy a shop in your own name. Just you run it. And, you know, let's get, because in those days, that was the way a lot of Asians were going,
culturally,
buying a shop.
Culturally,
buying your own business, setting up and then doing well. And I said, no, Dad, I want to do this. So he sent me down. I went on a 2-week training course to Dunbar in Swindon. They had a purposeful training center. I remember coming back, and on that Monday, I think it was June, and before I left, my offices were going to be in Dean Stanley Street, directly opposite Houses of Parliament, so beautiful offices. He sent me down and he said, Rajan, look, I know you want to do this, but I want to talk to you before you go on your first day. And he said, I only ask two things of you. He goes, there's a lot of people, our people, in this business who are very successful. But he goes, I ask two things of you. First thing I ask is, whenever you sit across the table recommending a product or a policy to someone, pretend you're selling it to me. Would you sell it to your dad?
Okay.
That's the first requirement I have. The second request I have of you is, whoever you do business with, if you go to a wedding or a function somewhere and you're in a big hall and you catch eyes with Courtney and he's right on the other side of the room, you don't need to turn your back thinking, oh God, Courtney's in the room. What should happen is Courtney should cross the room to shake your hand. I want you to do business like that. If you do business like that, you have my blessing, son, off you go. And I've never forgotten that. And I try and apply that even today.
That's an interesting second request. Can I ask why?
Because what he's saying is, don't do bad on somebody. Don't sell a policy because you want the commission.
And then you feel
I feel uncomfortable, right?
When you see that person.
Because I see Conan, I think, oh God, I sold him that policy. He's probably saying I didn't get any money out of here. Or it was not.
Right.
Don't do business.
So
like
trading
that.
With integrity.
That's the English way of saying it. Yeah. My dad said it in his way.
Okay, cool. Okay, cool. So you've carried that ethos then throughout your trade and your
in my journey.
Acceleration, I'd like to say. Because, okay. I mean, I presume that you've probably come from a sort of diverse background. You probably had your own challenges as well with kind of selling.
Those 6 years with Dunbar were not fun-filled.
Mm.
The 3 years when I became an IFA with that broker were fun-filled, okay? Because you're making money.
Yeah.
It's simple as that.
Yeah.
Plus, I found the love of my life. We got married. We moved home. All very positives. Covershaw wasn't always a walking
path. So Covershaw is a franchise.
Correct.
Okay. So for the people who don't really know what a franchise is,
okay,
summarize it in a sort of 30 seconds space of what
a franchise is. So Covershaw is a business model that people have and they think this will work really well. And if I want to replicate it across the UK, I can sell that model. And so people like McDonald's, Domino's Pizzas, KFCs, a lot of those are franchises.
Right.
Yeah. So the main corporate body doesn't own and run them. Somebody who's bought into the franchise. So we were the 54th store.
Right.
When we opened the Covershaw office in 2000. By the time we opened in 2003, we were maybe number 60 or something.
Right.
Today, there's more than 100 and about 95, 96 franchisees. And it's part of a much bigger organization called the Jensen Group, of which I'm a part of now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So how much control do you have when you are working under a franchise?
We were very lucky. I think with Covershaw, what they provide you is they provide you with the brand name.
Yeah.
Because we're a regulated industry by the, in those days, the FSA, now the FCA, Financial Conduct Authority. So they look after your compliance, your money account, your management system to manage the client and look after
your operating system.
Operating system. So any good franchisee, a franchisor will provide all those, you know, it's a turnkey operation. On the day you open your door, you're ready to do business.
Yeah.
You're ready to trade. That's what a franchise does. Where they gave you flexibility was to say, well, if you want to specialize in cleaning contractors or people that do photography or people that, you know, just do IT.
You can find a sector.
You can find a sector and off you go if that's what you want to do. Mm-hmm. Luckily, there wasn't any pressure on us to say you must sell taxi insurance or you must sell car insurance. Mm-hmm. You must sell home. It was up to us.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly, we found a niche for property.
Mm-hmm.
So anybody as a landlord or a developer from the ground up, property became an area of expertise for us.
Mm-hmm.
And the other area where we found ourselves to be able to provide the most help, because we believe we provide help and advice.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do as an insurance broker. Was owner-managed businesses like yours.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're always talking to the decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want.
Mm-hmm.
And we're a small business, you're a small business.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talk your language.
There's less barriers of entry, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, with our sales cycle, a short sales cycle is about 6 months. An average sales cycle can be anywhere from 6 months to 12 months.
Wow.
And there's a lot of people that you need to speak to. And even when you are relatively successful, you still need to do a sort of a tender application.
Right.
Or you still need to be able to present your services and communicate why you're going to be the best supplier, which is very different to how you trade because you're, like you say, you're speaking to the decision maker. Yeah. And essentially, you've got the gift of the gab. So when you are speaking to the decision maker, they feel very comfortable. They say, you know, Rajan's got my best interests at heart. I can give him a call on his mobile. You know, I feel like he could reach out to me at any time if I need him. I call him at 10 o'clock or 11 o'clock at night and I'm stressed and I've got anxiety. You probably provide that type of feelings.
I think doesn't matter what business you, I mean, you provide an amazing service, you know, deep clean centers for data centers. I mean, doesn't get any more serious than that.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, what we do is also serious. I always say to people, you may have a really good accountant, you may have a good solicitor, a bank manager, but at the end of the day, if you have a fire, none of those people are going to be able to help. And even if you call them, what they're going to say to you? Ring your insurance broker.
Yeah.
So you've got to have a good insurance broker as well.
Yeah.
It can't be dependent on price. It's got to be somebody you trust, somebody you know, somebody you get on with, somebody you meet regularly, and as you said just now, has the best interest of what they're protecting for you.
I think the fundamentals are as well, as people buy from people.
Yes.
And no matter how big, you could be talking to Coca-Cola and they could be speaking to the NHS and they're these big mountain companies, yeah. right? But then ultimately, whatever decision or business that what happens, it's primarily just two people,
yes.
people for buying from people. Yeah. And if you've got that sort of talent where you're able to kind of navigate relationships very well, it was something that really stuck out to me. I think I'm very observant of people. I observe great qualities and I observe qualities which I'm not too fond of. And I think yeah. because of the type of business that I'm in, especially when I work with corporate, I have to be quite quick at kind yeah. of detecting what people's qualities are. Like I say, and what I saw what you've done and how you've kind of progressed with our relationship and seeing how you do things is very impressive for me.
I remember that day at London Chamber.
Yeah.
It was a Go Connect event. You were standing by the window
yeah.
where the ledge is. And I think Ash said to me that, oh, Courtney's here. He's, and I
yeah.
remember coming up to you and saying, hi.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So I
yeah.
clearly remember that
day. Yeah.
And I think sometimes what can happen, Courtney, people connect.
Yeah.
And I think we've
But
connected.
I think it's yeah. more than a connection. It's yeah. like, it's not connect, it's like a connection.
Yeah, no, what I meant by that yeah. is we connect on a slightly higher level
yeah,
than
like
maybe
a different
somebody else I met.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think that day we just hit it off. You
yeah,
know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
We hit it off and
yeah.
since then we continue yeah. to hit it off. So I think sometimes you can have a relationship and a connection with somebody.
It's like a vibe, isn't it?
Well, it's a spark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just continues.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, and you know, the universe, karma works in a funny way, and it's nice when that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you see that relationship mature and nurture and grow, and you think, wow, what a great coincidence
yeah.
that we met.
Well, know? We was kind of talking about the ripple effect, right? And us meeting that day
yeah.
has now brought us to here.
Back here,
and
yes.
then, obviously, no one can see Ash right now, but yeah. Ash was part of Connect Croydon.
Yeah.
Am I saying that right?
Connecting Croydon. Yeah.
Which where I met Ash.
Yes,
and
yes.
then now Ash has been doing sort of media
Brilliant,
marketing
yeah.
and that
yeah,
sort of
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
for us. So it's kind of all brought us into that sort of space. Yeah. So that kind of leads me on to my next question. Connecting Croydon, is that something that you always wanted to do, or is this on the base of the relationships that you've manifested?
No.
Like, what made you do that? Because that's getting a lot of traction at the moment.
Because there was a vacuum. So if you go back before COVID, me and you and Ash could attend 3-4 network events a week.
Mm.
That's how much activity there was in Croydon.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made us successful in Croydon.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it was that. So your business was fundamentally built on that type of networking.
Yeah,
people.
Partly. That you, Rajan could go out, shake hands, and business flowed back.
Yeah.
You know, as you said, sometimes there's a lead time.
Yeah.
The beauty of our business is even if you renewed yesterday, in 11 months I can call you.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
I know
you
when,
know
you
when that business is
so
up for
renewal. So we are quite lucky in our business.
Mm.
But what happened post-pandemic was, you know, there was a vacuum. And when I met people like you or Ash, people say, Rajan, come on, what's happening?
Mm.
Why isn't there any network events happening in Croydon?
Mm.
So there was two things I knew. One, there was an appetite that if somebody held something, people would attend.
Build a bridge. And
because people, mm. yeah, if you build a bridge, people will cross it.
Mm.
So I knew there was an appetite for it. So slowly but slowly, my frustration grew.
Mm.
And that frustration led to thinking, stillness, let's see what we can do about this.
Mm.
So we're very, you know, we're very blessed. We've got some really good clients. And at mm. that time, we had the Tomorrow Hub on the High Street, Croydon Vision as our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I approached them, Susanette and Damien there,
mm-hmm.
was because they had venues that could hold people.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to them like this, saying, Susanette, please can we have your
We've
Bedford Hall free of
yeah.
charge?
Yeah.
I want to do a network event.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Tomorrow Hub. And when I went there, both of them said, yeah, absolutely, no
yeah.
problem. But Susanette added a caveat. What she said was, absolutely, Rajan, we can do that. But why don't we do it with a little spin on it that we ask and we make it engaging and attractive for small grassroots charities in Croydon to attend?
Mm-hmm.
Because at that time, there was an announcement by Croydon Council, I'm talking about October 22,
mm-hmm.
that £2.6 million was cut from local charities.
Mm-hmm.
Because obviously, they
mm-hmm.
don't have the money.
Mm-hmm.
Which means 45 or 46 charities had to shut their door on
mm-hmm.
the 1st of April 23,
mm-hmm.
because they were 100% reliant on council funding.
Mm-hmm.
And what Susanette's belief is that a charity should have the heart of a charity, but the mindset of a business.
Mm-hmm.
Because unless you get that balance right, you're
mm-hmm.
not going to be there
mm-hmm.
for long.
Mm-hmm.
So she's saying that if we can get small grassroots charities to attend our events, You know, somebody like Courtney could say, well, I could be a mentor to you. Somebody like Ash could say, I'll make a video for you. Mm-hmm. Somebody like Rajan could say, shall I look at your insurance for mm-hmm. you? Somebody else say, I can make a website for mm-hmm. you. So they should be there to rub shoulders with the business community to see what they can glee. Mm-hmm. But also to say, do you want to support us to be your charity for 1 year?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're there for that reason. And then if Connecting Croydon can raise some funds, we can try and give back.
Mm-hmm.
So the first event was in January 2023. I think you attended that.
I was there.
That was at Croydon Vision. More than 100 people registered. And that really kicked it off.
Did you expect it to get as much traction as what it's got now?
I think I was quietly confident because from all the hearing I had people. And I also knew that pre-pandemic, Croydon is a great, vibrant business community, especially on the small, micro, medium size, which is the sort of businesses we attract. Mm. So I knew that there is appetite there and I knew we would get people. I think the greatest thing that gives me the greatest pride is the fact that in the last 14 events, we did our last event last week, in the last 14 events that we did, 10 last year, 4 this year now, we've raised we've raised in excess of £8,000.
Okay.
But we've donated so far £5,250
wow.
to 6 local charities, grassroots charities. Mm. Now, for you to be nominated as a charity, you have to meet 3 criteria. First, obviously, you've got to be Croydon-based.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, you've got to be 100% voluntary, no salaries.
Mm-hmm.
And number 3, your income need as a charity has to be less than £10,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we put that last one in, generally, we donate between £500 and £1,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that if we donate £1,000 to you, that's 10% of your income. Mm-hmm. That's going to make an impact.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Black Grape Marketing has just released a LinkedIn post. We went back to 3 of those charities and did a video, an impact video, to say the money we donated to you, what have you done with it?
Mm-hmm.
That video is now on LinkedIn. Go and have a look. I can't tell you that makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up. That, now, I didn't donate that money. You guys did by attending.
You've organized an event, and I think you probably need to take some credit here as well.
I don't want to take any credit.
Because
I'm not going to take any credit because no. Let me tell you why. It's like holding a house party.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hold a house party, right? We know what a house party. But if nobody turns up, you ain't got a party.
But then you're the person who's made people turn up.
Well, I don't think so.
You've had to put the good music on.
Susan, and tomorrow, Harbdamian, unfortunately, he's moved on now. We were the 3 that kicked it off.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, we've got 3-4 other amazing people that have joined. Brian Daffers from the Daffers Foundation.
Oh, he's brilliant.
Fantastic.
He's brilliant.
Critical to the organization. Then Sam and Claire from Black Grape Marketing. Without them, nobody would know about us.
Mm-hmm.
They are splashing it out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Joe has joined us as well. Joe Vitica has a jewelry business and that. And she's now really the hub in our spoke now.
Yeah.
So she's absolutely critical. And obviously, Susan and me are still there. So the 6 of us really pushing this forward. We're volunteers. We buy a ticket just like everybody else to attend.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of volunteers that help us on the day. So Pat from Surrey Inks helps occasionally.
Yeah, yeah.
And then we've got Alexa. We've got Tom from Startup Croydon, the IT person. So we've got a couple of people who help out as volunteers on the day as well. Tanya Sinclair helps as well. So it's not Rajan. It's not Susan.
It's a collective thing.
So I don't think any one person can take credit.
Yeah.
It works because people like you and Ash and other people turn up and support. Without it, there's no organization.
So what's the next step for Connecting Croydon?
The next step is we really want to level it up. So we want to continue raising funds.
And sorry, pause. Yeah. Can anyone attend?
Anybody with a business or a grassroots. Listen.
Doesn't have to be from Croydon?
No, we're open. In fact, to show how open we are working with other organizations.
Okay.
We did an event in February with Founders Club.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we worked with Croydon Commitment, you know, at the last event in April. So we are an open organization. There's no hidden agenda. There's none of this closed door approach. We're completely open. We're completely transparent. If BNI wants to work with us or Bob wants to work with us or another network, we're here. Tell us how we can work. All we're about is providing a platform where like-minded businesses can come together, shake hands, and we can grow, inspire, and champion each other.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I mean, from a networking perspective, I'd say I'm relatively new to networking, maybe sort of like 2 years in. And the organization, the various different network groups I've gone to, I do feel like this networking event that you put on just feels a little bit more organic. It feels, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit biased as well because it's Croydon, yeah. And I'm in Croydon, and there's been so many times where I go to events and I might feel a bit uncomfortable, you know, I don't feel like I really should be in that space. But when I go to your event, I just feel much more relaxed. I feel like I'm at home.
I think that's because that is something part of our objective, to make sure you feel friendly.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the six volunteers that are there, and then the volunteers that help on the day, we call them sort of icebreakers.
Yeah.
We look out for people standing against
the wall. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We look out for people who are not talking to anybody.
Yeah.
And we go and reach out to them and say, hi, Rajan, is it your first time? What's your name?
Yeah,
got
a
name badge?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is there anybody particularly you want to meet? Why are you here? So if you say, I'm into cleaning, I do that, and I'm thinking,
I've seen you do it.
And I just take you along and I break the ice. So, and look, any good network organization should be doing that anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it doesn't happen.
I don't think we're doing anything new. I'm sure lots of people out there are doing that anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to my fair share, and I do believe that. I mean, maybe because of the space as well, and it's a bit more intimate, you're able to kind of do that. And sort of more of the corporate spaces that I go to, you know, it might be quite difficult to navigate through that. So I've got another question for you.
Sure.
What are your top three tips in networking? If someone's never been to a networking event and they don't really know what to do, and they're a little bit shy, or they don't know how to introduce themselves, or they don't know how to engage and speak to the right person, what have you got?
I thought you were
going to
ask me some difficult questions. Okay.
Okay.
All right. So, top three tips. If there is a list available of the people attending, if there is, if not, ask the organization, can I have a list?
Mm-hmm.
Do your homework before you turn up.
Okay.
So see who's in. So London Chamber do this.
Mm-hmm.
They send you a link with a list of all the people.
Mm-hmm.
Print it out. Get a pen. Mark on there who you would like to meet. Actually,
right.
Physically mark it.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got people in the room, you know, I put a smiley face against it.
Mm-hmm.
If they're a client of mine, I put two smiley faces against
mm-hmm.
it. And then I take that list with me. So the first thing is be prepared even before you get to the event.
Mm-hmm.
Try and do some homework on it.
Mm-hmm.
Who's in the room? Who do I want to meet? The second thing is you must have a clear message.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? I forgot my name. None of that can work. Be yourself. You can be nervous and be genuine. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But you've got to have a clear message about what you do and make it interesting. So for somebody like me, I could go around shaking hands all day long. Hi, I'm an insurance broker. Hi, I'm an insurance broker. That's not really going to ignite anybody's world.
Yeah.
So I could say, hi, we protect your business. What do you mean that? What do you mean by
that?
So you've got to make it a little bit interesting about what you do and what you say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really important. And then you've got to have, you know, the old cliche, have an elevator pitch. So
mm-hmm.
in one sentence or two sentences, can you explain what you do?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's got to be, in a network room, people are looking to shake hands and move about.
Yeah.
So you've got to be able to articulate what you do in your own persona, in your own manner.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got to be genuine, but it's got to be clear.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you have a business card. I know a lot of people now go around with the phone. Oh, I don't have a business card. Scan this, scan that.
Yeah.
I'm all for that.
Yeah.
I love technology, embrace technology. I'm all for that. I'm old fashioned. I like a card. So I'm going off tangent.
No,
so,
you're on free. The card. So, is the card the third one?
I would say you got to give something. But I said my golden nugget tip would be make sure you follow up. So if you go into a network event and you meet, say, 10 people
mm-hmm.
and you've collected 10 cards,
mm-hmm.
but make sure with at least one or two of them you've initiated a follow-up to say, look, Courtney, really good to meet you. I really enjoyed our conversation. I just want to work the room a bit. Is it all right if I drop you an email or give you a call? I'd love to catch up over a cup of coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Is that all right? Make sure you follow up at least with one or two one-to-ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's a BNI philosophy. Look, I cut my teeth at BNI 9 years.
Okay.
Two things I practice today, even today.
Mm-hmm.
Giver's game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's karma for you.
Mm-hmm.
And two one-to-ones.
What do you want to be remembered for?
Oh, my God. All right. You know what? There is a saying in life that if you want to make the most impact, you want to help those people where they don't know where that help has come from.
Okay.
So for me, it's not about what you want to be. Yes, obviously your close family, friends, will remember you for what you are. But if you want to make a difference in the world, then you...
It's a selfless help.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like Rotary, you know, saying is service above self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those people who, you know, do good work every day, whether they're running a food bank or feeding the homeless or, you know, going and knocking on that neighbor's door and just saying, are you all right, Mr. Joe? Mm. You know, all those things all add up. So it's a really difficult question. I think it puts you at the center of what you're trying to do. I think just being yourself, be a good, you know what, like me and Hina say, just be a good person.
Mm.
If you remember to say, people say to you, no, he was a good guy.
Mm.
I think that will be enough for me.
Mm.
You know,
that's very modest.
Well, I don't think it's more, I think, I mean, what do you want me to say? You build a building in my name or put a statue up in Croydon Centre?
Maybe.
It's not realistic. It's not what I'd rather you spend that money and take two people off the street.
Yeah. I mean, I was asked this question, and I think that I've kind of remixed the question a little bit. I think the question was like, sum up three words on what you want to be remembered for. And if I really want to be honest, I think I want to be remembered for being brave.
Perfect. I think that's good. Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of... everyone's got situations what happen in life, right? And everybody's got circumstances. And everybody has a slightly different set of cards, whether you come from a rich background or whether you come from a poor background. And they both have their own difficulties. You know, you've got the rich background who if you're born into financial stability, it's very difficult for you to meet expectations. And then from a poor background, you know, well, what would you expect me to do? And I've been delivered these set of cards. I can only get to a certain limit. So I think they kind of both possess their own sort of challenges. And once you kind of push past these narratives, what people kind of apply to themselves with that sort of victim mentality, which is natural. We live in quite a sort of negative world at the moment. Regardless of what side you've come from, there's always space for bravery.
Yeah.
And I think when I grow old and my kids kind of look at me and they say, do you know what, Dad, I've seen a video of you like 30 years ago. You know, what did you... And I would say, look, I was petrified of doing videos, you know. I stepped outside my comfort zone more times than I was inside my comfort zone, you know. And I want to be... Whether it goes right or wrong, I just want to be remembered for being brave.
Yeah.
Because I think we often live life within comfort zones.
You hit on something. So, you know, the bravest people I know are my parents or all the parents from my, you know, my generation. Because if you think about my parents were kicked out of a country, came here. My mom couldn't speak English. My dad could probably speak a little English. Mm. Worked in a factory where they probably got racism against them.
Mm.
Yeah. Then had to be brave enough to open up a business and move 20 miles across London in a complete area which they didn't know and uproot the family and take the kids. I think that's brave.
Massive.
Right.
I think that steps outside of bravery.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's almost courageous because I still can't move out of Croydon.
So I think bravery is a good word, but it's in different contexts. I mean, we're brave probably every day, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, every time we step out the front door, you're probably brave, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think if you come from a business angle, I was lucky enough to go to a founders club event last week, a gentleman called James Keyes, ex-CEO of 7-Eleven and Blockbuster.
Okay, okay.
And there was a question and answer 1 hour. Fantastic speaker.
Yeah.
And he used that word, you know, and he talked about his background, where he came from, the toilet was outside the house, and, you know, and where he is now. Yeah. But, you know, everybody needs to make a brave decision at some stage.
Yeah.
It could be financial, it could be family, it could be love, it could, you know, it could be, am I moving premises?
Yeah.
Am I moving home?
Yeah.
You know, am I employing that individual?
Yeah, yeah. All, there's bravery in every in different elements.
Yeah.
I think what's important for us is us are often, like me and Ash, like obviously no one can see Ash, but me and you can see it. Me and Ash will like finish up some sort of video in or some sort of content. And we talk about the people who were quite inspirational for us and the books that we're reading and the people that we listen to. And we go off into a tangent for like several hours about this. And I think there is a fear of people stepping outside their comfort zone. And that's obvious, right? There's a lot of people who kind of say, you know, you've got to step outside your comfort zone. But there's actually talking it and there's actually doing it.
Yeah.
And I think in order for us to elevate to different spaces, it is outside of that space where you generally feel quite comfortable. And I think from a sort of a business perspective, it's about risk, isn't it? It's about how many times can you take a risk? I mean, you need to take calculated risks, of course, but how many times can you take that risk?
I think risk is one thing, but there's one question somebody once asked me when I told them I sold my business. They said, what's the one tip you would give them? You know, if you had to do it all again.
Yeah.
And for me, it's people.
Yeah.
Your number one asset is people. Yeah. So you may start off from your kitchen table and you're just one man band.
Yeah, yeah.
But when you get to that first point of employing that first individual, invest in that individual. And you know what? That I've had that belief, and it took me almost 10 years running CoverShow before I realized that your people are more important than your clients, your systems, your 100%. Franchisor. It's your people that make you 100%. And last week, James K. seconded that. The only thing he added to that was allow your people to grow and educate and learn.
Yeah.
If you provide an environment in your business where they can flourish and they can grow and learn, you will have a workforce that is absolutely gunning for you.
Yeah.
Because they're thinking, you know what, I'm not just coming to work. They're allowing me to grow as develop as a person. Where else am I going to get that? I'm going to give everything to Courtney because he's giving me that platform.
Yeah, that's
beautiful. And I think that is so powerful. And that really sat with me. And everybody I meet, I still say that today.
Yeah.
That, you know, invest in your people. I know it's like a soundbite, isn't it? What does that mean? Well, it could mean little things like, you know, maybe on a Friday you get them a pizza.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, make sure you provide a clean, nice space for them to work. You know, maybe let them have their birthday day off, or I don't know, but invest in your people. Yeah. Ask them what they want to do. Do they want to do a course? Do they want to go, go further with a hobby or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And see if you can help them. People are your most important asset. And I think sometimes we all forget that.
No, that's beautifully said. Beautifully said. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Courtney. Ash, thank you so much. And I hope people find it useful.
Yeah, we're going to talk. Obviously, we've got to wrap up, but we're going to continue our conversation. But thank you so much.
God bless.
Thank you.
Okay. Brilliant. Well, I hope that was useful. Yeah.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. No, I really enjoyed that. Thank you so much. As you can see, I love talking, as my wife will tell you.